Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Stop.
Hello and welcome to the AI Movie Night. I'm doing an Oscar special this evening, and joining me for all the reaction, talk about the films and the nominees and general buzz around the Oscars is Simon Dowling. How are you doing, mate?
Very well. Thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure. I'm glad we got it sorted. You were one of the first people I asked, but then you were busy and then you weren't and everyone else is busy. It's one of those things, man. It's a crazy thing to cover, so
yeah,
I'm glad I didn't ask
there.
You to do it at 3 a.m. Do you know what I mean? That wasn't going to go crazy. Let's just stay up and do a live coverage of the mad thing.
Yeah, no, jeez.
I've never watched on the red carpet start to finish. Yeah, that's the dream. I've never watched it start to finish, to be honest, because obviously it clashes and it's like 3.5 hours long. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Plus all the red carpet build-up. It must go on for like 5 hours, you'd think. All in, and then they obviously have all the after shows and all the rest of it, so it's I can't, from a perspective of non-Hollywood, from a very kind of British, from your perspective Irish kind of film background, it's otherworldly for me. I still find it quite glamorous and quite exciting and quite interesting, because I've kind of watched the BAFTAs a little bit and I pay attention to some of the other stuff that goes on, but It's the Oscars is the big one, It's the one everyone prepares to. So, and it's one, sadly enough, that some filmmakers make their films in order to try and get award nominations, It's absolutely mad.
I don't like that, but I often find myself being like, that looks like an Oscar film.
Oscar bait. Yeah.
And I won't watch it. But some of those films can be okay, but I just feel it's just a little bit like, you can just kind of spot those films.
I would say one of them this year, if we're going to go and kind of discuss the kind of best picture, the 8 or is it 9 that were nominated. It's crazy.
There was a lot, wasn't there? Yeah.
So we'll talk about those and kind of reaction on those. And then we'll kind of run through some of the major categories. And then there's a couple of questions and a couple of things to cover on the lesser kind of high prestige kind of, I think, given 2017 films, really, it's a pretty stellar year for films, to be honest. I mean, looking at the list of best picture, so you've got The Shape of Water, Guillermo del Toro, Call Me By Your Name, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, and then Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. So, I mean, that is about as eclectic a mix of films I've seen in a long time in a Best Picture nomination.
Yeah, I was pretty shocked by a few of those. I mean, I wouldn't have expected something like Lady Bird to be in there. It's quite a indie film in a way. I mean, it's not really something that I watched the film and I was in the film that I absolutely loved the film, but I was like, hey, is this up for an Oscar? It's not what you'd normally expect. So I like that they're trying to at least branch out a little bit, even though I kind of knew that film wouldn't win. I think the fact that it was even just picked is nearly a win for those type of films, you know?
Yeah, just to be up there. Like a bit of a shift change. I mean, a couple of years ago, Grand Budapest Hotel was nominated Best Picture. Didn't win, did it? Or maybe it did.
Don't think it won, but yeah.
No, it won quite a lot of Oscars, didn't it, that year? It definitely, and that for me, I know Wes Anderson's had some kind of exposure to Oscars over the years, but not massive amounts. And there's films like that, and I think Lady Bird is quite your typical indie film, really. It doesn't feel mainstream at all.
No,
It doesn't, you know, it's obviously directorial debut by Greta Gerwig, and she's done a fantastic job. I know you're quite a big fan of Noah Baumbach, is it?
And I love them both, yeah.
Yeah, they are married, I think, so they obviously
They directed
similar interest, yeah.
They directed a film between them, they directed Frances Ha, which is quite a strange thing. It's not something that really happens very, very often, but it's the first film that she's made by herself, written and directed by. I think she's written a few other films, but it's her first one that's just her. So,
It's a stellar film for what it is. I really liked it. You're gonna have to pronounce the name, the lead actress, because your Irish tones will do it much better than I will.
Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan, yeah, I always get the first name. Saoirse Ronan. So Saoirse Ronan.
Can I hear what you would have said?
No, I probably was going along those lines. Forget the first name. I forget the first because it doesn't.
I don't
read.
Blame you. It makes no sense. No, it makes absolutely no sense at all.
It doesn't read like that for me. You know, it's like Siobhan in that spelling.
Yeah.
She's been nominated 3 times, and she's 23 years of age. I mean,
yeah. That's incredible.
She was nominated back 2008 for Atonement. And she's, I don't know if you've seen that film, she's amazing in that film. She's only 13 years old as the best supporting actress. And then I can't remember what she followed up with, but then for this, I mean, for 23, she's got some career ahead of her because, I mean, she's brilliant in this film alongside Laurie Metcalf, who I think, you know, we'll say go on to talk about, but she didn't win Best Supporting Actress, but she was probably second in line because she was also excellent as a mother in this. I mean, they're both just incredible performances for me.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, she's great. I mean, it's crazy that she's only 23. It's actually kind of... Like,
it makes me quite
she's
impressed,
already,
to be honest.
She's already putting like 10 years in that type of performance. Yeah. She's already been up for 3 Oscars. I mean, yeah. Like, I think it's quite based. I was reading a few interviews with Greta Gerwig, who's the woman who wrote and directed the film. And it's pretty much just based on her,
it's her life
own
story,
life, you know. So it's interesting, to kind of have her there, you know, and
it's that kind of different
try
Catholic,
and be
Catholic
her.
School,
so it's
Catholic,
isn't
Catholic,
it? Yeah.
That Catholic school take as well. It's very much obviously taken out of Ireland. Taken out of that context, what you kind of associate, and then dumped in, you know, a different part of the States.
I like that, actually, because it meant, like I found the film quite, like, I found myself being able to relate quite well with the film.
Yeah, I spent a little bit of time in Ireland and, you know, links around the Catholic stuff, and you can feel that, you know, it changes the scenario, but there's still the message of kind of traditional is there, but in a very kind of uniquely rebellious kind of way. I think it's a really good film, but I'm pleased it got a nod. I am really pleased. It's the kind of film
me
wouldn't
too,
expect.
Yeah.
I think speaking of films, you wouldn't expect to be in there. I mean, it has got incredible hype, but considering it came out so long ago, and considering it's not mainstream Oscar territory, Get Out for me is just a fantastic filmmaking achievement. I mean, the performances, Daniel Kaluuya is obviously incredible and got a Best Actor nomination. He's got on to be in Black Panther, and the guy's career is just on a huge upward trajectory. But Jordan Peele nominated for 3 Oscars, original screenplay, director and film. I think it's the 3rd time only that anyone's been nominated for all 3. So, yeah, it's quite a remarkable achievement, to be honest. That film came out so long ago now. It's amazing.
It's
still got
that
kind of traction and buzz about it, you know?
I remember it being just built up and a bunch of people that normally wouldn't recommend films. But like, oh, have you ever, you know, have you, it was more, have you heard of this film? And I was like, I remember reading something about it because I read something about it linked off the episode of Black Mirror that he did. And I'd heard that he was in some other film or something. And it just built up hype. And then it's absolutely incredible film though, isn't it? It's such a weird film.
It's weird. So it kind of crosses genres a little bit because you've got a bit of horror. You do have a bit of comedy. And I know there's a bit of controversy around it being nominated in that weird kind of comedy category at the Golden Globes to kind of fit it in, it felt like. But it has got that kind of comedic edge, and it's got one, and I won't spoil it because I think I want to come back and do Get Out as a full review. But it's got one particular moment towards the end of the film that just made me laugh like crazy. Really shocking, worrying, fear-inducing moment. And then something quite comical happens, which I will talk about. But I hope more people are watching Get Out because I still think it's a film that probably hasn't been seen by the complete masses yet, you know? But the performances and just iconic shots, man. I mean, that shot when he's slung back in the chair and then, tears rolling down his face. I mean, for directorial debut, to produce anything like that, I mean, that guy's got crazy imagination.
And especially for him, he's not excited. He's not really made anything like that before. He's not really done anything anywhere near that level of weirdness, and as you say, just the imagination is crazy. I mean, I only really know him from the Peele show. He had some sort of a show.
Yeah, it was himself, something. Key and Peele, it was something like that.
And then just being on things, you know, and just making an appearance. So when I found out it was him who had made the film, I didn't know what to expect, and I was like, is this going to be some sort of like weird, a wacky kind of film, but
could have gone that way. I mean, no, it's amazing structure. I mean, I don't normally talk about film structure, but the premise is really clever because it sucks you in to thinking it's a kind of traditional, you know, kind of love story with a twist, you know, typical white girl brings home a black man controversy. You kind of don't know where it's going to go. You have no real concept. And obviously you've seen a bit of trailer-based stuff, and there's some really iconic kind of visual posters around it. So I knew there was an element of a horror twist, but I didn't know it'd be that crazy. I didn't know the whole, and you know, a whole family would be involved, which is a massive spoiler. But you can't at this stage not spoil films. They've been out a long time, but yeah, I'm really pleased. I think ultimately, I understand why it didn't win, but I really kind of wanted it to be honest.
I thought that it actually had a pretty good chance.
It must
of
have been
winning.
In close with the shot. It must have been.
I think
close.
It was because it's like, it's, I don't know. It just feels like maybe I'm
it
being
felt
a
like
little
it
bit.
Had, no, it felt, no, I think from an outside perspective, I think it felt like it had the buzz still around it. Do you know what I mean? And the hype. And, you know, in a year where I think they are trying to recognize more than your typical Oscar film. You know, like we said with some of the nominations, it felt like that would have been the kind of
letting one of those films win Best Picture, but it did win one Oscar. So, I mean,
it did.
It
won,
still
it
up
won
against some pretty big
and I'm,
films.
I'm glad
so.
It won.
Yeah,
yeah, it did. I'm glad it won one. He deserved one. I would have been gutted if he didn't win one.
And I suppose, I think that fits quite well with the film because that for me is the best thing about the film. I think it's just so well written, and you can make an argument for it not being the overall best picture because maybe it's not got all of the kind of editing and all the special effects that it's.
I would say
I don't really like that,
films.
But
yeah, I'd say there's two films that edge it, and one of which won for me. I think the ones that are a little bit more traditional Oscar. I think The Post is thrown in there for the gravitas of being.
I've not watched the Post, but
so I'm not going to pass too much judgment.
Yeah.
But I think when you get Streep and you get Hanks and you get Spielberg,
you know what you're going to get.
And I think by all accounts, it's a solid film. Maybe not quite spectacular. And I think it's the kind of film that will always get a nomination, but I'm not sure it's quite worthy of winning.
I'm happy that it didn't win, you know, but I think it's fine for it to be up there. And I don't really have any issues
with
that.
No. And I think Darkest Hour is another one. When we talk about clickbait for Oscars, you know, we talk about Oscar bait. I think that film for me feels like that, and I haven't seen it, so again, I'm not trying to judge. I think the big thing for it, it's one of those films that's got one incredible performance in it.
That's what it looks like. Yeah, I haven't seen it.
A little bit
like that.
Yeah, I mean, Oldman, no secrets, and it was pretty much nailed on all the way through. With Gary Oldman won the best Oscar, and he was always going to. And I'm pleased for him because he's a really established British actor who's been around for forever and has done some incredible films over his years. He's only been nominated once before. And I think by all accounts, he's pretty deserving because he really did, you know, if you look at the visuals and look at it, I've seen the trailers and various and he really did get into that role and people think he's just incredible in that performance. So, you know, I do completely give him his dues for it, but I think it's one of those films. And there's been a few over recent years where you get one incredible performance. Eddie Redmayne, Stephen Hawking is probably the similar one I can think of where
he is incredible
in that film. Absolutely mind-blowing for me. But the film itself is quite middle of the road. It's got a couple of moments of brilliance, but it's mainly him that carries it. And so you'll get that in certain films, and that's quite typical of Oscars. I think... Have you seen Call Me By Your Name recently?
I have actually. That's fun.
Is it as good as everyone says?
It is actually, yeah. I was a little bit hesitant on it. I don't know why. I'm a massive fan of the guy who did a lot of the music for it.
Was it Sufjan Stevens, isn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, I was kind of looking forward to that. And he actually does really, he just kind of helps make the film. But it's a really... really pretty film. Like it's filmed in this amazing part of Italy. It looks unbelievable. It's this kind of like massive big old mansion house in the middle of nowhere with a pool, and they spend most of their time like in a pool and eating food, and it just looks and has this really nice feel about the film, and the acting is fantastic in it. Again, it's quite a strange film as well. It's not like
I know it's not conventional. I mean, everyone's hyping Timothy Chalamet, who's also in Lady Bird. He's 22 years old.
I know, and he's up for best actor.
Again, it's just like, oh my God. And I'm a massive fan of Armie Hammer. I think he's a really good actor.
Yeah, he really is.
We didn't really talk about him in Social Network when we covered that. He's obviously the twins. He's the Winkelvi, but he's gone on to do some really cool and interesting films. He did a film, Wheatley film, Fire, what's it called? Oh, Christ, I'll remember it. I'll come back to it. But he's done some really interesting films recently. He's one to watch. Yeah, he's one to watch, I always think.
Yeah,
I think he's the kind of guy that will come around when the right role fits. I think he is a kind of future Oscar winner. I can kind of see it. The film is Free Fire, which I was remembering, which is ridiculous.
I liked that a lot, actually. Yeah, that was great. Yeah. Really good. Yeah. Really, really interesting.
It's got some cool actors in it. Charlize Theron, obviously. And it's kind of like Brie Larson in it and Cillian Murphy, and it's just an amazing cast. It's a really cool film if anyone wants to see it. It's always a recommendation from last year. But yeah, no,
Call Me By Your Name is a very good film, and I'm happy that it won Best Adapted Screenplay, which I think is kind of like a
89-year-old man. Which is incredible.
I actually didn't realize that. That's crazy. It kind of has. It does have a little bit of that feel about it. I mean, there's...
Is it kind of, vintage Hollywood about it or not? Because I know they love...
It's just got more of that... It feels like a foreign film in the way it looks a little bit as well. Okay. And it's based in Italy, and most of the time they're speaking in English, but there is Italian in it, so there is a bit of
I'm gonna check it out. It's been on the list for a while actually, and I'm glad it's got some praise and obviously quite a few nominations. I think it's very
It kind of has a it's a strange, like, I didn't really know much about the premise of it, so I don't want to spoil it, but I think most people would be aware of what the main thing is.
I think there was a bit of controversial I think there was a bit of controversy around it because I think they slightly advertise it as a boy meets girl when it's a boy meets boy film.
But it's played very well, because even in the film, it does bounce you back a little bit, that you're like, even though you know, you're kind of like, it's going to, and then, you know, so it is well done. And it's not, it's kind of like, there's not a lot, a lot of films with that as the main thing in the film. So it's, and, but it's done very, it's not done to make that as a point.
I think that's important.
It's not like they've based the film to make something that's a little bit odd, to go, okay, we'll make a boy meets boy film, and they like base it all around. It's very, it just felt like the right thing to happen. So it was very well done, but yeah, it's
good. Good.
I liked it a lot.
Good. That is one I will be certainly seeing. Phantom Thread again, Daniel Day-Lewis's proposed final film, which I think, did he get nominated? Yeah, of course he did. It's Daniel Day-Lewis. He didn't win this time, but I haven't seen it yet. I understand people love it. I think it looks gorgeous. Again, another very glossy looking film. Interesting kind of love story, but again, I haven't seen it, so I can't really make testament, but it's Paul Thomas Anderson, so whenever he makes anything, it's always going to get some kind of buzz, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know why I haven't watched this film yet. It's kind of one of those films, like, about a month back, there's this really nice little small indie theater that's near me, and they were doing a Paul Thomas Anderson month, and I went to see a few of the films, like, in kind of build up to the Phantom Thread. But for some reason, I just haven't had the time to go and see it. I think I might have missed it now, so I'll probably just have to watch it at home. But
yeah,
it's just one of those things. I think there's just a lot of films were out in a month, and I missed three or four of them.
Crazy,
you know,
the Oscar season, like, the UK and Ireland do get battered in kind of January, February time for Oscars season. We tend to get it like 3 months after the States for whatever reason, and it's just, it's very difficult, because if you want to watch all these films, they all tend to come out in a space of like 4 weeks. Like, you've had Call Me By Your Name is quite recent, and Phantom Thread and Lady Bird, and then Darkest Hour was out this year. Three Billboards has been out this year. The Post was probably kind of around January time as well. And then, you know, and then I, Tonya and various others. You're talking about 10 films.
That's only just said, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, you're talking about 10 films of kind of Oscar-worthy kind of buzz. And you've only got things like Get Out and Dunkirk, which came out last year. Speaking of Dunkirk, a film I saw in the IMAX and haven't seen since, and I'm not sure I will. And it's not to say I don't love it for what it is. And so for me, it was all about the sound and the visuals and that tension in the IMAX when the Spitfire is going overhead. It felt like it was an incredible experience, absolutely blew my mind. But it's not a traditional story, like, it's not a script driven story like some of the other films that are nominated. And it was a film that was quite daring and quite bold, and obviously typically Christopher Nolan in its delivery. But I'm understanding why it didn't win more than a couple of technical Oscars, which I kind of thought it should have gone to Baby Driver, sound and editing. But
yeah, me too. I think we're pretty vocal about the same thing to say about that. I was a little bit peeved. I just thought it should have had one.
I mean, sound editing in that film, Baby Driver, I just had to mention.
That's like the whole film, really, isn't it? It's not the whole film.
People just go, it's a big part of the soundtrack. You know, but it's not just the soundtrack.
But
when he's got one headphone in, it's a different sound to when he's got both in. When Buddy takes the headphone out and puts it in his,
it
changes the dynamics of the sound. And I'm like, this is just unreal. And obviously that opening, well, the scene when he's gliding along, going to get the coffees, and all the kind of words and lyrics are on the kind of graffiti and artwork around the street. And it's just like, this is all about the sound. This is Edgar Wright. I watched it again last night. And honestly, there isn't a break for a song for more than like 2 minutes in the entire film.
The soundtrack is amazing. There's like 25 Like, yeah, there's something like 25 or 30 songs.
Yeah, I came out the cinema and bought the soundtrack instantly, kind of thing. You know, it was one of those things I was like, yeah, I need this soundtrack because Edgar Wright's got incredible taste in music. But I was a little bit gutted because if anyone's ever listened to me on the Comic Pod or anywhere, probably if they've just bumped into me, I've probably been banging on about Edgar Wright in some state or Scott Pilgrim at one point in my life or another. But I just think it's exciting to see where Edgar Wright goes next, in fairness. And I think he will have more commercial praise. And I think he doesn't make those kind of films, but he is moving in those directions of the less conventionally funny kind of films to the slightly edgier, more fun, you know, more dynamic, a little bit different tones, you know. So I'll see where he goes. But I mean, Dunkirk is a feat. It is a magical, well, I don't know, not magical, but mesmerizing kind of experience. You are glued to the screen when you're in there, and the sound and everything just blows your mind. But I didn't leave going completely satisfied by the story as such.
Strange,
so that's what left me a little bit. You know, I admire it a lot, but I don't love it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I kind of feel a little bit like that. I mean, I went to see it in IMAX as well. I know this is probably going to, doesn't really, I don't like to tell people this, but I don't really see the point of watching that film at home personally. There might be some people who, I mean, if you have like a massive big screen and like a Dolby Atmos or something, then possibly, but even still, I just think
there's
for
some
me,
hilarious the, meme. Have you seen the meme of the flip phone where it says watching Dunkirk in its prime location or some shit like that? And it's basically someone watching it on the smallest phone of all time. It's like, this is not the way that is obviously someone taking the piss, but it's not the way anyone would envisage. It's the film,
it's
like,
the type
as soon
of film.
I saw it in IMAX, I was like, just see it in the biggest screen you can see with the loudest sound you can find.
It's
that's definitely the way it should be seen.
It's definitely not a film you want to watch on an airplane anyway, on a little tiny
God, that'd
airplane
be awful,
screen.
Wouldn't it? Yeah. With those crap airlines.
It'd make you feel ill, probably. Yeah. Like, I thought, I just thought that for me personally, I like things that are written well and acted well, and I like films that are mostly people just kind of talking. So I'm not a big, I'm not a massive action fan. I think this is just a purely action film, and I was very entertained and I felt like I was in the Spitfire, but I just felt like the people in it, the actors and who they were just bland. Like, there was no,
they weren't given a whole lot to work with. They weren't given a whole lot to work with, and it wasn't,
and they barely had
a name
even, you know, like there was
I know
a few people who weren't even didn't have a name, and it's just a
well,
bit
I found that hard. I found it hard. That's what struggled. That's right. The big thing with it is I didn't feel connected to any of the characters.
Yeah.
So you don't really care about their journey. I think the whole point is you're supposed to care about the bigger picture of things and what transcended
and what happened.
But you need, as a film follower, you need to root for someone. Do you know
something
what I mean?
Like, and
because the enemy is such, because the Germans attacking, you didn't even see, I don't think in the whole film you saw a face of someone. They were all a hidden entity, which is very clever because it was all built by that tension and that incredible score, but it didn't look, like you said, IMAX experience, I think it was incredible for that, but it's not a film I'm going to sit down on a Sunday evening or something I want to kick back. And it's not something that I don't know if I will rewatch it. I honestly don't. I think I loved it for what it was at the cinema, and that's that experience, you know. There's a couple of films that have done that before, and you think you're gonna go back to them.
Saving Private,
I would watch Saving Private Ryan. If they ever released that in IMAX, I would go in.
I was gonna say
that opening scene,
that film kind of did that right, because you felt you kind of had that pull with the Hanks in it. Like, you kind of felt a bit, I felt like an attachment to people in that film, but they still had the big battles and the tension.
I think it's probably the most balanced war film. I mean, Apocalypse Now obviously is the other, but it's definitely close.
I'd love to watch that in IMAX.
Yeah,
I think we should start a little petition if we could just get everybody Just go to your local cinema.
It'd just be amazing, man. It would be amazing if they re-edited that for IMAX, yeah. There's a couple of other big films, and these are two that I would probably spend a little bit longer on, only because these are the kind of two favourites of mine. And also, for me, obviously, there's some kind of big nods in terms of acting as well, in terms of best actor and actress and things as such, and supporting actor. So,
hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I will, yeah, I'll mention a couple of the other things later and come back to some of the other performances and films that I really liked and have been nominated and haven't won and such. But first for me, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I've wanted to talk about this film with someone ever since I've watched it because I loved In Bruges, right? So In Bruges is you know, Martin McDonagh. It's a brilliant, brilliant film. Brendan Gleeson, who is a hero of mine, and the kind of much maligned for no reason, really, Colin Farrell, who for me has had an incredible career, but people often fall back on the years of you know, alcohol abuse and the shit films he was making, like Alexander and things at the time. But he's done things in between that, like Minority Report and Collateral and
Intermission.
And Bruges. Intermission is a brilliant, amazing film. Which I got, I watched when I was in Ireland, when I lived in Ireland for a little bit in Dublin, and it's just the
archetypal
Irish film, and I love it. And he's made some, you know, he's gone on to do some really interesting things. I know he's now working with that director and did Lobster and something else that came out.
Yeah, he made Lobster, yeah, which is a bold film for him. I like him as an actor, but he definitely does get a lot of grief.
He's not even in this. Yeah. I don't even know why I'm talking about it, but it's just because I had to mention In Bruges, really. So,
I think so
Martin,
yeah,
McDonagh made In Bruges. He then made Seven Psychopaths, which It's a good film. It's interesting. There's really good characters in it, and Sam Rockwell's in it. It's always a big plus for me. You know, some variously. It's a different film, but I quite enjoyed it. And then he's come back to make this. And Three Billboards is, for me, I don't know, it's one of the most original films I've seen in a long time. And the premise is relatively straightforward, but does have a couple of twists where it's kind of got that dark comedy element, as you'd expect from Martin McDonagh. That's his style. But then a couple of really bold moments that kind of really hit you in the gut and almost take your breath away. And it shocked me, really. And I mean, Frances McDormand was always going to win, I would say. I mean, Sally Hawkins for Shape of Water might have pushed her quite close. So I can see why completely, because she's wonderful in that film. But Frances McDormand, just she's kicking ass and taking names, and it's a brilliant performance, and she leads with such kind of courage and bravery, but she's just so cool, man. She's just effortlessly cool. I love her. I think she's since Fargo, And I'm a big Almost Famous fan. It's one of my favourite films, and she's excellent in that. She plays the mum in that, and she's just had such a good career and worked so closely with Coen brothers and really good directors. But this was the film that just was made for her. And I, you know, when I think he wrote the script, I don't think there's another actress he could have in mind for me.
Yeah, it's. I mean, even just thinking about the film, I just have a massive smile on my face. It's just so funny, you know. Yeah, just thinking back to little bits in the film, and just the script is just and as you said, the casting is just perfect. I mean, it's I'm nearly certain that he made that role for her. You know, like, it feels like one of those films where he was just like, it's like a kind of, you know, your kind of Kill Bill thing where he's just gone, this is my film that I make it for her, kind of thing. And
there's
no
one
else could play this.
No, there's no one else. I mean, this is a year of, you look at some of the actresses and nominated, there's some incredible performances this year, and that has been for a long time, you know. It was for a long time Streep Show, it was a Meryl Streep Show, and often actresses didn't get a look in outside of Streep, and now, you know, you're seeing other ones kind of come to the fore. Margot Robbie's obviously was up as well, and Sally Hawkins, and I can't even say Saoirse Ronan.
I got it.
And then obviously Streep got a nod, as she always would, but I'm sure she's wonderful, as she always is.
Yeah.
But it, you know, the best supporting actress, you know, you got Alison Janney, who I love. Mary J. Blige, which I haven't seen Mudbound, it's a Netflix kind of production, and she's supposed to be incredible. Leslie Manville for Phantom Thread, Laurie Metcalf, who we talked about for Lady Bird, and then Octavia Spencer for Shape of Water. And I love Octavia Spencer. She's incredible. But all of those performances, the ones I've seen, and I'm sure I'll see the rest, just brilliant. But Frances McDormand just steals it. She steals the show. She stole the show last night. Did you see her speech?
No. Oh, I haven't watched it yet. Is it good?
Yeah, I tweeted a couple out.
Must watch it.
Do watch them, because she gets all the kind of women in the audience to stand up. She makes some really great bold statements. You know what she's like. She really doesn't conform, and some people maybe don't like that. I think it's amazing. And you can tell how much it means to her, and it means to the rest of the cast. It feels, I've seen anything around this film. I mean, Rockwell is one of my favourite actors.
He's just so funny, isn't he?
He's like no one else. So I mean, Moon is an incredible film of his, which he's just in almost on his own the entire time. And everyone rates him for that. But he's always been a kind of, you know, the kind of second guy or third guy in a film. He's never going to be the lead, it wouldn't seem. I think eventually he will. Now he's got directors who kind of maybe put him on the map. But again, he's always the coolest guy in the room. I love a film, came out a few years ago called The Way, Way Back. And the guy in that, he's just amazing. And he's just the kind of person you want to be friends with. I just have a beer with, man. Imagine having a beer with Sam Rockwell. He's the funniest guy. He's just so funny. And in this film, he really does kind of get the right script and the right part, and everything just felt like it came together. I was just delighted he won. I think he's the kind of actor that is unique, and it's quite hard for a unique actor. You know, you look at what maybe DiCaprio does and Gyllenhaal, and Gyllenhaal's a great actor, and he's gone in some interesting directions, and I know Leo pushes himself, but I just think Sam Rockwell's the kind of guy that just feels different. He approaches things differently, and you know, I got a lot of time and respect and love for that, so I'm really happy he was up. And so was Woody Harrelson, who's obviously quite briefly in this film, but again, just perfect performance. And I mean, Woody's obviously great in everything, but the cast in this was just stupendous, really.
Yeah, I agree. I just love Sam Rockwell so much. I don't know. He's just thinking about, like, that the character in Three Billboards is just incredible, because
he shouldn't be a likable man. He's a racist.
I know. He's homophobic, an awful person, but you can't help but be like, you're just like kind of, but you still want him to come through. And he has an absolutely amazing arc.
He keeps coming back to the police station for his job.
You feel so bad for him, though, even though he's saying these racist things. You're just like, but still, he's just like, but look at him. He's so, like, you're just like, and he's like so thick, but you can tell that he's trying so hard, and like he's just some of the stuff he comes out with is brilliant.
But his arc, like you said,
his arc is fantastic. Yeah,
it is. It's a great film. A little bit surprised it didn't win, actually. I am a little bit surprised. I think for a long time the buzz was behind it. Obviously, Frances McDormand and Sam Rockwell were kind of shoo-ins. I would just say, so the other people nominated for Best Supporting Actor while we're there, have you seen The Florida Project?
No, I haven't, but I really want to watch it. I've heard it's very good. Yeah,
please watch it. Willem Dafoe, who plays the kind of motel manager, he feels like he's been in that motel. You watch the film, he feels like he's been in that motel for 5 years rehearsing for this part. He is the perfect fit, and he's not in it a lot, but I was really torn between the two, and you probably agree when you watch it. Woody Harrelson for Three Billboards as well. Richard Jenkins for The Shape of Water, and he's wonderful in The Shape of Water. He really connects well with Sally Hawkins' character and plays off her exceptionally well. And then Christopher Plummer for All the Money in the World. I still love that nomination. I hope it's performance-based, but I think it is a big, big
It's probably a bit of a kick in the ass, isn't it? Yeah, I think it has to be. There's a little bit of that.
I think it is. Yeah, I think it's a bit of that. He's obviously 88 years old, came in to shoot his shots within 4 weeks. It's unreal story, to be honest. It's quite amazing, really. But it's, you know, again, some really good performances in there, and I think everyone was deserving. And I think I'm so glad Rockwell won. I would have been devastated if he hadn't, to be honest. And then the best film. So the best film is Shape of Water by Guillermo del Toro, who also won by Best Director. I'm delighted, to be honest, because I think ever since I saw Pan's Labyrinth, which was probably 11 years ago now, something like that, I think I saw it in New Zealand when I was traveling. I went to see it. And I've said a few times on pods that sometimes you go in the cinema, especially when I was traveling the world a bit, and you'd go in and watch. I watched Babel in Sydney, and I came out after 2 hours, whatever it is. And I forgot where I was, because the cinema takes you, if you're that engrossed in a film, and this was way before, I didn't even have a phone at the time. I'm quite happy about that. You're not, you know, not even looking at your phone, not tweeting, not taking yourself out of that situation, and you lose yourself in it a bit, and you come out and you're like, shit, where am I? You know, it's like, I'm not at home. Do you know, I'm in Sydney, this is mental. And I went to see, you know, Pan's Labyrinth, and it blew my mind, to be honest. I honestly, you know, the guy's obsessed with the kind of the links between fantasy and you know, and monsters. He loves monsters, and it works so well the way he does it. And to me, he's just a storyteller. I mean, he's you know, when we talked about script and we talked about story, he is one of the greatest storytellers of our generation. I think he does things that other directors don't dare to do or have the imagination to do. And he's quite selective about how he goes about his process, and you know, he takes a long time to produce things. And there's obviously famously he was involved in The Hobbit, and then that fell through. And you just kind of wonder what he's going to do next. I mean, this film to me, and I think I'll do a whole pod on it, because there's a lot to talk about, but it's a fantastic achievement. And I love the fact you've got this Cold War kind of backdrop, this Soviet kind of backdrop, and then you've got this monster thrown in for good measure, and it just changes the perspective. And the film, what you think is going to be, for me, just completely isn't, and it becomes a kind of crazy, twisted love story in the best possible way.
Yeah, I actually only watched it last night.
Wow.
I had been, for some reason, I had it in my head as being a typical Oscar film when I first saw the trailer a while ago, and this is just gonna be like, because in a way trailer showed a lot, but it kind of tricked you in a way, because I was like, there was a little flash of the monster in it, but it wasn't really made out to be a big thing, and you kind of get a feel of that, like, kind of thing. But it just, like, after watching it, I was like, that's one of the weirdest films I've ever seen. And I couldn't believe, you know. And I thought, first of all, he looked like he was there. The monster didn't. I never once thought that looks weird or fake. No. Or, you know, like, it just was actually, it just looked incredible. And special effects were absolutely fantastic. I think that's why it won Best Picture.
I love downplayed
That's what I CGI, thought was great about.
I love costume design like that. I love when things are done with that kind of sense of realness. I mean, he uses the same actor to do the part, and it was the same in Pan's Labyrinth. You know, the guy with hands, eyes in his hands.
Yeah, I haven't seen Pan's Labyrinth for such a long time. I actually really want to go back and watch it again.
I'm going to have to because it did. It's the kind of film I really can't wait to show my kid, and it sounds strange because he's not old enough. But it's kind of got that kind of scary element to it, but it's got that kind of like element, and it just takes you to another world, you know?
Like, it's kind of, like, in a way, a lot of his films remind me of, like, the Lord of the Rings, which fit in why he was supposed to be doing The Hobbit. Well, I don't really know what went down there. Did he?
I think he couldn't commit. He wrote to a bit of it or time. Something. He wrote a lot of it, and he was quite connected to the story. And I think he was in pre-production in New Zealand for a good kind of year.
Because I think that would have been incredible, wouldn't it? If that had would have been. Happened.
And look, the Hobbit films as they stood were disappointed, man. I mean, you know, they had some merit, and I still thought they were really charming. And I think Martin Freeman was still great as Bilbo, and there's some really nice. Mm. Roles in there, but it's obviously shouldn't have been three films because the third film is basically fabricated.
It should have just been the one.
If it'd been two films and done really well, I think it's fine. It could have been two, and I get why, but it never needed to be three. And I just think, you know, getting control from Peter Jackson is probably a very hard thing to do because it's his baby, isn't it? So I think it was always determined and destined to be that way. It's a bit the kind of George Lucas effect, you know?
He just kind of has that element about him. This perfect, it's told so well.
I think Mexican directors seem to do that. So I think four out of five of the last best film winners. So you've got Gravity, you've got The Revenant, and this, and then another one. I think it's just mad. Like, so
that's weird. You know, that's crazy, actually, isn't it?
It's really good. Yeah. So I think it's deserving, and I think he's deserving of best director. I mean, if Villeneuve had been up for it, I would have wanted it to go to Blade Runner because, honestly, I love that film.
Yeah, me too. I was a little bit, at the films that they picked, it was quite weird that wasn't there.
I think the runtime has really killed that film, you know, and it's such a shame. I mean, 2 hours, 40 minutes for a sci-fi film that's a mainstream budget, and that restricted it going into certain cinemas. It restricted how many times it could be played in those cinemas, and it didn't get the buzz around it. It's still one of most mesmerizing films I've ever seen at the cinema.
I loved it. I absolutely thought it was fantastic, but I think a lot of people don't like either film, and I think people just... I just don't think it has the same...
There's a lot of people... You know what I mean? There's just a lot of people who just don't... Water, and a load of people slagging it. It's the biggest load of shit I've ever seen. Yeah, because... It's not made for everyone. And I think people go, it's up for an Oscar and this and the other, and they go and see it. And they go, what the hell is this shit? It's a man having
I was very shocked.
With a fish.
Yeah.
Do you know that?
Before that scene happened, I was just like, Octavia Spencer,
when she's on about, you know, where does it come out? It's hidden. Wow, it's amazing.
Yeah, and then the way she just does the little hand gesture, and it's like...
Nice. I think it's great. And Michael Shannon as well. I haven't mentioned him.
Oh, yeah.
Such
Michael
a great
Shannon.
Bad guy, man. He is the best bad guy around at the minute. You know, Christoph Waltz aside, he's the guy you go to cast as a villain because he's such a fucking menacing bastard. And you do genuinely, you know, there's fear elements there, but it's so clever. And I think we briefly talked about Sally Hawkins earlier, but what a performance, man. She is incredible.
Yeah.
She doesn't Amazing. Talk. And she displays every emotion you've ever seen on screen, and she doesn't talk. It honestly, I think that's amazing. And you really feel a scream when she's screaming. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of incredible for me. I know it's not nominated, and I know I'm talking from a parental perspective, but I see a lot of kids' films. And I think I'll briefly talk about animation in a minute, but Paddington 2 wasn't nominated for anything, but Sally Hawkins is amazing in that. She was amazing in Paddington. I was like, shit, is he written this part just for her? And he had. And I was like, that's amazing, because he wrote this part just for her, Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, really?
She just for her. He just knew she was the right person for it. And it just works. I think I just thought it was... Yeah, I got caught up in every second of it. I thought it was incredible. So there's a lot of other things to discuss. I mean, I've got a couple of questions, and we will come back to Blade Runner in a minute. Couple of other wins. So Coco, have you seen Coco?
I haven't, but I really, really want to watch it. I've heard a lot of great things about it.
It's good, but it's like Pixar at its best for me, and it's been a few years since I could say that.
Yeah, they haven't made a great film Pixar in a while, so I'm really looking forward to it. But I heard that I've just heard a few things that they actually play their instruments, and it's meant to be just unbelievably animated. It's not just a person hitting their hand off a string or something. It's actual finger playing.
It's the best animation I think I've ever seen.
I'm gonna have to go see it. And
you feel like when they're in Mexico. So it's purely authentic Mexico. I think all of the cast, or 90-odd% of them, are Mexican descent. And it's a really beautiful telling of Día de Muertos, so the Day of the Dead. And it's kind of got that typical Pixar kind of, fantastical kind of feel about it. Do you know what I mean? There's that touch of non-reality and that touch of kind of real kind of tragedy, as Pixar films do, and it delivers emotion better than half the films that have been nominated for Oscars this year. And that's no joke. They approach subjects of death and maybe afterlife and love and cherishment and things that I don't think anyone else can really do was that effectively, but they do them in a real sense.
Yeah, and a lot of their films have that.
Ways that kids can understand, man. I mean, Up has got, it's about as emotional as I've been at a kind of film since Up was released.
Yeah.
10 minutes of Up at the beginning.
Up is odd. I can't, I actually don't think I can watch that and Inside Out dealt with like mental issues and health issues and anger and depression, but it was just I thought that film was absolutely fantastic.
I'm very much looking forward to it. Won song as well, best song, which I really
I saw that. Yeah, I was a bit miffed because I was
Sufjan Stevens. Yeah,
kind of wanted Sufjan to win, but I'm okay with it.
You watch it. You might come around if you watch it. It's a really good film. And honestly, when they're on the streets of Mexico, it looks almost real. Honestly, I've never seen animation like it. That Pixar are just brilliant. And Inside Out was only a few years ago, and they still make some great films. I'd always sit through a Pixar film, and I have to sit through a lot of shit animation, including The Boss Baby, which was nominated for an Oscar.
I can't believe that was nominated for an Oscar.
And Lego Batman wasn't nominated, and I'm curious about that.
It's really odd how they kind of how they kind of went out all on picking more indie obscure films, and they didn't pick Lego Batman. Was the first film up for?
I don't think Captain Underpants. No, it wasn't. The Lego movie
wasn't
quite controversial.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah,
I guess because
it's not weird.
Is it because it's kind of in the middle of an animated film and a real film in a weird way?
I know
it's not actually, but it feels almost like they've. Not made as an animated film in the same way.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The other films
it's
they
kind
pick,
of
so you've got The Breadwinner, you've got Loving Vincent. They're quite indie kind of animation films, so they're not traditional. And then Ferdinand, which is
Ferdinand is very good as well.
Michael Cena as a bull. So you never know. We could make an animation film and stand a good shot. If The Boss Baby can do it,
I think Hefty Horse is going to be up for an Oscar next year.
It's going to happen.
Hefty Horse on the red carpet. I'm telling you, it's got. I can see it.
I'm going to be
giant
the plus
horse
one.
Costume.
Plus one. It's fine.
Well, I can fit about four.
I'll be the back end of
five
the horse.
People. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think,
squeezing there easy.
Who was saying on Twitter about the red carpet?
I don't know.
Trev Downey. Have to give him a little shout out. He can take the rear end as well. He can go at the back.
<Can he not? laughs> Jesus. This pod's taking a different turn.
Jesus.
Best original score this year was The Shape of Water. It beat Dunkirk, Hans Zimmer, which was a bit of a shock. Johnny Greenwood, Radiohead, I love, did Phantom Thread score, which I really need to check out now.
Me too, yeah.
And they did beat The Last Jedi as well. Star Wars wasn't really kind of up for much, which I kind of understand. It's not really I liked it a lot, and I got a lot of positive things to say about it, but I don't think it was quite as technically there as some of the others. We talked about original screenplay. Winner was Jordan Peele, much deserved for Get Out. I loved that Lady Bird was nominated, The Shape of Water, Three Billboards. That's a really tough category. And the outside and the one there sick, is yeah. The Big Sick, which is one of my favorite films of last year. I liked
that was up as well, actually, yeah. That was great.
I just think it's brilliant. And again, a bit like Lady Bird, it's a very kind of original story of someone's background. You know, it's very almost self-portrayal of what happened to him.
It's
know?
About so, him, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, him and his wife. But yeah, it's literally his wife
wouldn't
his
play
life.
Her.
No.
Wouldn't play no. the role, which must have been quite strange. It must have been such a weird a thing, strange. You know?
Well, they don't very spend a lot of time on screen together when she's not in a coma, so I guess it kind of makes sense in the law.
Yeah.
It's mainly Holly Hunter and who's the guy who's on Channel 5 in the morning who plays the dad in it? I can't remember
Jeff
his name.
Jeff Cobb? No, I'm not Jeff Cobb. No. The other. Oh my god, it's so bad. I know. I have.
Oh, everybody loves Raymond. It's Raymond.
Yeah.
Where did I get
Jeff Ray Romano Cobb from?
Ray Romano. I don't know where you're going.
Strange
Jeff.
Place.
Ray edit, Romano, edit who's that amazing out, in it. He's amazing in it. Ray Romano.
Yeah, he actually is. And Holly Hunter.
Yeah, he really is. He's got some brilliant lines. I love that film. I think it's a really good film. Everyone should check it out. That's the kind of major ones in terms of the actors' score. You know, loads of other stuff. Adapted screenplay. I was really happy The Disaster Artist was up.
Yeah, that was great.
I do think if there wasn't such controversy surrounding him at the minute, he might well have seen a nomination for James Franco. But
I think that's why I think they had to. Yeah.
Yeah. After what happened last year with Katie Affleck winning, which wouldn't have happened this year, let's be honest. I think given the kind of surroundings, things around him, you know, I think, like we said, James Ivory calling by your name was deserved. A lot of people have got a lot of love for Aaron Sorkin's Molly's Game because Aaron Sorkin is the man of writing and talked about on Social Network, and he obviously wrote West Wing. And Mudbound got a nomination, which was good. In the cinematography category, I do have to mention that the first ever female nominated cinematographer, Rachel Morrison, for Mudbound,
that's insane, isn't it?
Hoyt van Hoytema for Dunkirk, Nolan's favourite, and Dan Lewiston for Shape of Water, probably very close. But the winner, finally, and I will just read the films he's been nominated for, and this will blow your mind in the fact that he's never won an Oscar before. So the Deke, Roger Deakins, incredible man that he is, has never won an Oscar, and he's been nominated 14 times. So he was nominated in 95 for The Shawshank Redemption, in 97 for Fargo, 98 for Condon, which I've not seen, and then Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, The Man Who Wasn't There, No Country for Old Men, unbelievable that he's not won that, Assassination of Jesse James, The Reader, True Grit, Skyfall, Prisoners, Unbroken, Sicario, and Blade Runner. I mean,
wow, yeah, that's an incredible feat.
How he's not won four or five at least is beyond me, to be honest. He is, and cinematography is something that is kind of hard for people to get their head around. You notice a lot of actors, directors, work with the same cinematographer. So the Coen brothers use Deakins a lot. Denis Villeneuve has taken him up, obviously done Prisoners with him and Sicario and Blade Runner. And there's, you know, Wes Anderson's got a certain cinematographer that works with him quite regularly. And you can feel that. So it's their input on the film and how it looks and how it feels. My one always to go back to, and he sadly died a few years ago, was a man, and I've forgotten his name, Road to Perdition. He was a man that was a cinematographer on that film. And for me, that's, you know, if I was making a film, that's, I don't know, the sequences in that and the driving scenes. He worked with Sam Mendes a few times, but it did win Oscar winner for Best Cinematography. So it was Conrad L. Hall and his back catalogue, things like American Beauty and Road to Perdition. And, oh, God, he's done some amazing things going way back. And you would expect him to still be going strong, but he sadly passed quite young. And there's some of these cinematographers that just don't get the praise that they deserve. And Deakins is the one because, I mean, Blade Runner was so deserving of this category. It's it's the most visually beautiful film I've ever seen, and it did blow my mind at times, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. It was I saw it in IMAX as well, luckily enough.
Me too.
I actually saw it twice. I saw it just once when it was first out in normal, and then I was like, I have to go see this film in IMAX. I just have to. And yeah, it was. It's I like the bit where they come into it's the bit at the end.
Vegas.
Yeah, I thought that just looked so cool. It's just like
I loved all. I loved all the different areas, even the beginning one when you've got the kind of insect farm stuff, which just looked otherworldly for Blade Runner. And obviously you're used to those kind of neon cityscapes, but then they go to the kind of junkyard area where the orphanage is, and it's just like, this is mad. Like, I've never seen anything like this, and it looked incredible. And I'm so glad it won.
Me too. I would have been so like good to it,
you know.
Even like the first film, I mean, I watched that quite recently, and it still looks so good. I mean, it holds up so well.
Yeah, if you want to listen, we've done podcasts on Trev, Danny and Joe, who used to host this, on the original Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049. So we have discussed both films. I think we did 2049. We must have done. In detail on former pods, so you can go back and listen. And yeah, they're both just excellent, excellent films and cinematography. I'm so glad Deacon's finally won. I mean, don't know how it took this long. I really don't. But it's a massively deserving thing. Is there anything else that stands out for you? I mean, I think the event as a whole looked really good. I'm really pleased with everyone that's won, because I think it was fair. I look at it and I don't. There wasn't any shocks as such, do you know what I mean? But I think everyone was fairly justified in what they won.
I think so as well. I mean, there was a few things I would have liked to have won just for myself, kind of all, like we talked about earlier with the editing and...
Yeah,
Baby Driver. It was just a little bit. But I mean, I can see why Dunkirk won them as well. And
I can see that too. Yeah, I've just played.
I didn't feel too hard done by
a couple of others. Yeah, production design, Shape of Water as well. Visual effects was Blade Runner up against Star Wars and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and War for the Planet of the Apes. Editing went to Dunkirk as well instead of Baby Driver and Shape of Water. And sound editing, sound mixing. So you can see there's a lot of technical categories in Oscars that people don't always understand, but.
Yeah,
they mean a lot to the people that work hard on these films, because you've got to look at it from their perspective. It's not just the director and the main actors, or even production.
It must be so hard to be that. Yeah, I'd say it's
the work and the hours, and
you get no credit for doing all that work.
No, you don't. You just get a kind of small paycheck.
Most people are just wouldn't even know that they'd be like editing. But if you know, it's hard to explain, I suppose.
It is, and from an outside perspective, even for me, I'm not trained out of it, and I want to be, and I don't know why.
Saying editing, but editing, I wouldn't really know. I think it's one of those things that if you don't notice it, then it's been made well. I think that's the problem with it. That's kind of like my work is like that. When you don't know that it's there, that means that. You've done a very good job. So
I think there
it's
are
really
films
hard,
that
you know?
Are quite seamless, and you rewatch them back, and you go, "Christ, this is." I mean, you know, Baby Driver is a rule, like we said, and Edgar Wright films as a whole.
But he has that very
distinct
way
of
he
scenes,
edits.
You know?
Is quite it is him, even though it's not him
it
who actually does edit it. But he, you know, yeah, he has.
He's
a
obviously very
particular way of doing
to the process. Exactly.
I imagine so. Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of. A couple of things we didn't really talk about, and I know we've not seen it. Have you seen I, Tonya?
No, it's only just come out on Friday over here, so I'm going to watch it.
Yeah,
go and see it.
So Alison Janney, you know, is apparently and Margot Robbie, who I think must.
But
have
even from the trailer, you can
just
kind of tell
nailing stuff at the minute. Margot Robbie has got a production team.
Yeah,
she's got a production team. She's producing some fantastic films. She's very ambitious, you know, and very young, and obviously she was nominated. But I think it sounds like Alison Janney kind of completely steals the show.
Everyone
kind of knows her from The West Wing, and she's the mum in Juno, and she's been around 10 Things I Hate About You. I remember from all those years ago.
Oh, yeah.
She's just great in everything she's always been in. She's such a charismatic actress. But I think she's just kind of completely transforms herself in this film, and she gives an incredible speech.
I didn't know it was her when I saw the trailer. At first, I was just like, she looks like really familiar. And then, like, when it came up at the end, I was just like, holy shit, okay, that was Margot Robbie. That's insane, because she looks like the real person.
Yeah, she does.
Tonya Harding. There's actually a weird little link back to Sufjan Stevens. Actually has written thing about her, a song about her. I don't know if it's actually in the film though, but it's about her, so it's kind of a weird little thing.
I'd be intrigued.
Kind of music video. But
overall, really happy. I think the one other thing I've got to mention, Logan, nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay. I would have loved it to win something. I know it's not your typical Oscar film by any stretch. And you can't look at it next to you and go, oh yeah, Infinity War is going to sweep the bill. Although I might imagine it might be in with a shot for some of the editing categories if it comes as you know, the standard and visual effects that we'd hope it would do. But Logan,
yeah, I can't
get
imagine
that nomination.
Much else, yeah.
That nomination's quite a bold thing, you know. I mean, like we said, it's in there with Disaster Artist and Call Me By Your Name and Molly's Game and stuff. But it's a really interesting film, and we've done a pod on it on Comic Pod and really proud of it. And it's such an exceptional film for, and it doesn't matter what genre, you know, it's just an exceptional film, and I'm glad it was nominated, and I'd like to see more, like we said at the start of this, more kind of different films in there, The Big Sick being in there, Disaster Artist, Logan, you know, there's quite a good variety, you know, it gives you hope that you'll see different actors and actresses winning and different directors, and, you know, it seems a little bit more of an even keel. The one thing for me, and I will leave it with this, is I think Coco should have been nominated for Best Picture. And once you see it, you'll probably agree with me. And I think it's kind of time that things aren't just boxed into
I felt like that.
Just
for
looking
a little
at some of the other films, Darkest Hour by everyone's called, or The Post, or I just don't, you know, it sounds to me like it's that it should have been worthy. And it seems, I always find it a little bit disappointed when people don't always give maybe comedies or superhero films or whatever genre it would be that you think isn't maybe getting enough respect. It has to be a certain type of film to be an Oscar nominated. But I hope that is slowly changing.
It does seem like it is. But yeah, I don't really, I know what you mean about the best picture, because that's the one, that's the big one that everyone wants to win. And it's meant to be like the best film out that
well, I
year
think you could
overall,
put that down to five. So I don't think you could put it down to five. They've obviously bumped it up to nine.
The nine, I thought the nine was a bit much, because it kind of takes away the winner. I think it kind of does take it away a little bit, because then you're just like, although the film that won, you feel like they've lumped in nine films. It's not as big of a thing as it was if there's just five. I mean, if there's five and your film is picked, that's your, like, you know,
yeah,
that's incredible. But maybe they felt like to have the more indie films and non-Oscar films that they needed to have more, which is a bit pointless then, you know, why?
It is. Know, I don't think you need it. Like, I honestly don't. No. I think the things like The Post and you know, I'd argue Dunkirk feels like it's just not quite there for me, you know, visually in the effects and sound design.
That's the thing, but it's meant to be best film, and it's missing a lot of things that the rest of those films would have to make it best film overall.
It's the story, isn't it? Like Three Billboards and The Shape of Water and Lady Bird even, and Get Out certainly just live by that incredible script and incredible storyline. So, yeah, completely. Anything else in there that you wanted to mention, or were you pretty happy?
Pretty happy. There's nothing that I would have... There's no other films that I can think of off the top of my head that
no, I
should have been,
great
that I expected to be there, you know.
No, other than, you know, Thor Ragnarok.
Thor 3, I would have loved to get a screenplay. But that,
well, why is the visuals not in there or screenplay, man?
I think you that know. Would have, that could have easily got best adapted screenplay, I think. If you haven't looked what's there, you know, I think Logan was a great film, but I wouldn't have thought that screenplay was its strongest point, actually. You know what I mean?
I agree. I feel like that was just thrown Patrick in Stewart there. Maybe didn't get a nod for best supporting actor in that film. I honestly think
it does seem strange.
You could argue that point.
Hugh Jackman as well could have easily got a best actor.
Yeah, they're never going to do that, sadly. No, but it is.
But he was like phenomenal. So that is quite strange, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the I had Blade Runner for me was pretty high up last year, and Logan and Get Out. You know, Disaster Artist, if the controversy around Franco wasn't there, maybe I would have liked to see him get a nomination for Best Actor because I think he was brilliant.
It's kind of sad, isn't it?
And maybe Holly Hunter or Ray Romano as supports, you know. I think they're kind of worthy for me. I think they're brilliant in Big Sick. I think it's a brilliant film. But yeah, I think overall, a really good event, a really good evening. I watched some of the footage and I will watch a little bit more. Some of the speeches were really good, and just Deakins finally winning after 14 bloody nominations. I think it's just a proud moment. I mean, I literally go back and I saw the films he'd produced or you know, been a cinematographer for, and I was just like, how has this guy not won before? It's utter scandalous. So yeah, I think that's great all round. Thank you very much for coming on, mate. I know it's been hard to pin you down, but it's nice to talk. What was for me, you know, brilliant year of film last year. I think there's some absolute standouts in there, and there's some I'm yet to see. And I think there's always great with the Oscars because it throws up a couple of things that you may not have considered previously. And you know, I'll definitely go and check out. I don't know, all the majors really. So, and that's that. We'll be back quite soon. I've got loads of things in the offing and stuff, but might look at one of these films that we discussed, Get Out or Shape of Water, in a little bit more detail. Or there's a potential pod on Denis Villeneuve that I'm working on. So thanks for listening. I appreciate all the feedback and, you know, all the stuff since I've been hosting this pod and for the last pods that we did on David Fincher. And we'll be back with you soon. Take care.
Stop.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.